Very early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin made their plans. So they bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. "Are you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate. "You have said so," the man Jesus replied. The chief priests accused him of many things. So again Pilate asked him, "Aren't you going to answer? See how many things they are accused you of?" But Jesus still made no reply, and Pilate was amazed. Now it was the custom at the festival to release a prisoner whom the people requested. A man called Barabbas was in prison with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the uprising. The crowd came up and asked Pilate to do for them what he usually did. "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate, knowing it was out of self-interest that the chief priests had handed Jesus over to them. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have Pilate release Barabbas instead. What shall I do then with the one you call the king of the Jews?" Pilate asked. "Crucify him," they shouted. "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. He had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. The soldiers led Jesus away into the palace, that is the praetorium, and called together the whole company of soldiers. They put a purple robe on him. They twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on him. And they began to call out to him, "Hail, King of the Jews!" Again and again they struck him on the head with a staff and spit on him. Falling on their knees, they paid homage to him. And when they had mocked him, they took off the purple robe and put on his own clothes on him. And then they led him out to be crucified.
I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died. My riches gain I count but loss, and all content on all my pride.
With the whole realm, amen.
from Cyrene, Simon, the father of Alexander and Rufus, was passing by on his way from the country, and they forced him to carry the cross. They brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. Then they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it, and they crucified him. Dividing up his clothes, they cast lots to see what each would get. It was 9 a.m. when they crucified him. The written notice of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." They crucified 2 rebels with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "So you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, come down from the cross and save yourself." In the same way, the chief priests and the teachers of the law mocked him among themselves. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. Let this Messiah, this King of Israel, come down now from the cross that we may see and believe." They crucified him, also heaped insults in him. At noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. And at 3 p.m, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of those standing near heard this, they said, "Listen, he's calling Elijah." Someone ran, filled a sponge with wine vinegar, put it on his staff and offered it to Jesus to drink. "Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to take him down," he said. With a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus saw how he died, he said, "Surely this man was the Son of God."
I guess many of you have been to Good Friday services for longer than I have, and you all know the gist of the story and the importance of it for us. So I've taken a little bit of a different approach this morning, which I hope you'll appreciate and be able to reflect on in your own time. So I'm guessing that we all know if you ask 6 people who witnessed the same incident what they saw, each one would give a different story. And in this age of social media, we do not have to be on the spot to see everything that's unfolding. While there's always been bias in reporting, these days we have other sources to just confuse the matter so much more. Different ways of accessing the news, some of which are reliable, some not so much. And I guess given the information we receive via artificial intelligence, fake news, and even the recent royal photo scandal, we know that seeing is not always believing. And so I wondered what those who were present on that original Friday morning might tell us about the events. We've read Mark's gospel account this morning, and Peter was Mark's source. So there are quite a fair bit that his third-party account wasn't there for them. So that will influence a little bit about what we discover. As we go through them, though, I would like you to consider which person or group you might identify with. Which one of the various people that were present do you see yourself in? And while Jesus is obviously the central character in the narrative, those who are identified in this account each had different responses to what they witnessed or experienced in those direct encounters. First of all, we come across the chief priests, elders and teachers. They figured a fair bit in the Jesus story, and most of us will be familiar with the ongoing relationship that Jesus had with them. From the very beginning, he'd been a thorn in their side. He's someone stirring up trouble and seemingly undermining their power and authority. They'd been trying to lay traps and provoke Jesus into saying or doing anything that might give them the upper hand. Well, today we come to the climax of their interactions. We start following all the events of the Thursday evening and that confrontation in the garden. Jesus is now well and truly in their hands. They saw what he'd been doing and the time had come to act. Their conclusion was that the best thing to do with a troublemaker was to get rid of him. And I guess there are those today who would view Jesus and his followers as troublemakers. And particularly in certain parts of the world, getting rid of them, for they are a very real threat, is the easiest way to deal with it. But I wonder, is this Jesus person a threat to you? Someone who should be avoided or taken care of at all costs? The chief priests and the elders and teachers then take Jesus to Pilate. Pilate was a Roman appointment as governor of this particular outpost in the empire. He was a man of power, but with no sympathy towards those who were under his rule. And I found it interesting, looking a little bit into the character of Pilate, that not long after these events take place, he was called back to Rome to stand trial for cruelty and oppression, particularly on the charge that he executed men without proper trial. Well, I guess all that feeds into our story, but all of that aside, Mark, or Peter even, had some insight into who this man was. As we read the account, we find that he was amazed that Jesus did not defend or deny the allegations brought against him when he had the chance. Pilate also saw, or Paul commented, that there was obvious to Pilate that there was self-interest being served by those who brought Jesus to him. There was a bit more going on than was obvious in the words. But it's John's account of these events that make me think that for all of his record of hardness and cruelty as a ruler, something in him was stirred by this encounter. He realised that there was something special about this man, Jesus. When Mark merely records that Pilate ordered the sign reading, King of the Jews, to be placed on the cross, it's John who tells us also that it was when Pilate ordered the sign that the Jewish leaders wanted it changed. But Pilate had seen something in his encounter that made his words remain and remain a strong statement for all who saw them. I mean, he didn't believe Jesus was the Messiah, the one the Jews were waiting for, the one sent by God to redeem humankind. It was not his religious practice, but he knew there was something there. And I guess there are many among us today who have encountered Jesus or heard about him and perhaps seen the works of his people and know that there is something in those actions and influence. There's something about this man. They might say he was a good man, a good example of how we should live, but they don't recognise him as Lord and Saviour. Are you like Pilate? Is Jesus just a good man, someone whose example is to be followed? But there's something in his teaching, but you're just not quite sure yet what that might be. We then hit another group of people, the crowd that had chanted for the release of another man. It's an interesting consideration for us, because you'll recall last week, many of these same people had gathered to welcome Jesus on his approach to Jerusalem for the Passover celebration. And yet, in less than a week, they have turned and only need a little encouragement to start baying for blood. When we talk about mob mentality these days, and I guess this is a really good example of it. Over the past few weeks, the news coverage was of an incident in Logan. I'm sure you've all seen bits of the story. But a large crowd had gathered to meet up with a foreign social media influencer to do a piece about their neighbourhood. Things got out of hand. People got hyped up, and then some of them turned on the police, among other incidents that took place. Likewise, we can easily bring to mind, I'm hesitant to mention it, but it's a good example, about the January 6th, 2021 incident in America. just another example of what can happen when a large group of people gather and a little bit of stirring takes place. And it's similar for those who were present on that morning 2,000 years ago. All the people present would have been oblivious to some of the bigger events taking place around them. There would have been those present who were just curious about what was happening, those who were easily led, and those who were not satisfied with how preceding events had unfolded. I wonder, do you identify as one of those looking on at those who followed Jesus? Perhaps someone along for the journey, a little curious, but again, not sure what it's all about, and glad that you weren't involved. Which brings us to poor old Barabbas. He's an interesting character in himself, and Mark tells us that he was in prison with a group of insurrectionists who had committed murder in a recent uprising in the area. Barabbas had been part of a rebellion in the city against the Roman authorities, and in accordance with Roman law, he was condemned to die. Barabbas saw his need for salvation and freedom from the Romans. He tried to redeem his people by his own ways and in his own strength, but he failed. Given that a few weeks ago people were hailing Jesus as one to bring salvation and freedom, we could spend some time looking into the contrast of these two men, but that's for another day. We can't know what conclusions Barabbas came to about his release. But we can see that when we try to take things into our own hands, when it comes to finding freedom from those things that separate us from God, or those things that burden us, we can't succeed. Barabbas ended up in jail and would have been executed, except that Jesus ended up dying in his place. Do you try to do things that you think will help find you freedom from the situations that you find yourself in? Learn to your own efforts for those things that are a burden you carry. Are you like Barabbas and only end up in worse situations due to your own efforts, rather than allowing Jesus to make the way to freedom, to take them from you and take your place in that pain? The soldiers who escorted Jesus to the place of execution and divided his clothing by a game of chance. Now for them, it may just have been another day at the office. Nothing really extraordinary was happening. There's a few more people in that section. I do want to bypass Simon, who's mentioned at this point, and we'll come back and look at him separately. In Mark's encounter, we also find the two men crucified with Jesus saw him as a weak figure, someone worthy of ridicule. We need to remember that Mark's account is from Paul. He wasn't there on that day. So the words that we hear from John's Gospel and elsewhere, Jesus may have said the words of forgiveness to one of the men crucified with him, but they're not recorded in this account. The onlookers at the crucifixion may have seen Jesus as a failure also, a fallen hero. And the person that gave Jesus a sponge with wine vinegar on it gave a dying man some relief from something that was at hand. Again, John says that Jesus asked for it. That's not what we've got recorded. But either way, some comfort, I guess, in a way, was offered by a simple person. It was the cheap stuff, swine vinegar, not the best top shelf bottle, but it was what was on hand, probably for the soldiers on guard duty. And it's an act of compassion that this man offered. But all of these people were there to see and didn't regard Jesus as anything more than a figure to mock and ridicule. For some, his situation represented broken dreams, a loss of expectations, or even a source for profit, and that he was no better than just an ordinary man. Perhaps this is how you see Jesus. And I've seen some people that I've encountered who call themselves atheists, but in having a better conversation with them, you know they have a sense and knowledge of God and of Jesus, but broken dreams, things they've experienced, have changed the way that they view God, causing them to deny him, but still hoping for something. Are you in that category? Do you think that God has not heard your dreams, that he doesn't know that things are not as they should be? Are you feeling without hope, but still hoping for something? Now we'll come back to Simon. You could say Simon was just a person in the wrong place at the wrong time, or just a person in the right place at the right time. Mark tells us he was coming in from the country and happened to be passing by the procession to the place of execution. In fact, he's identified as Simon of Cyrene, identifies him as being a displaced Jew from the parts of northern Africa, returning to Jerusalem for Passover celebrations. And as Mark records his son's names as a means of identifying, that tells us that at least both boys were known to the early community of Jesus' followers. There are a few Simons in that group, but it was this one who was dragged in to carry the cross. And this simple description included in the Gospels tells us that that incident and encounter with Jesus changed him. He and his family became part of the earliest community of believers. Simon was just going about his day, and suddenly he had an encounter with Jesus that changed his life and the life of his family. It's also recorded that people from Cyrene were in the large Jewish group present on the day of Pentecost. So Simon may even have returned home with others who had been changed by their time in Jerusalem. Have you been going about your daily business and had an unexpected encounter with Jesus that changed your life? And the final character that Mark mentions in our record this morning is the Roman centurion. For this man, just like those under him and the soldiers present, it could have just been another day of duty in Judea, a long way from home, with strange people doing strange things. This man knew, though, that something was happening before his eyes. I just wonder, has anybody here caught up with the it's a series called The Chosen? Okay, right, that's good. I've got to start. Some of you do know what I'm talking about. But there's a character in it that I think will be this man at the very end when they finish filming. Gaius, in this case, is a former high-ranking Roman centurion in Capernaum, the father of his servant and the current praetor of Galilee, and also has an ongoing relationship with Matthew. He's on the edge of the goings-on of Jesus and his followers. He's watching, he's interested, and in mission terms, I guess we'd describe him as a person of peace. And that's despite his allegiances to Rome and the duties he must perform. Now, the series, they fleshed out a lot of the characters and made them real people, and some of them do have ongoing roles within the story. And that's why I can see the correlation. This man's watching and looking, and he may come to know faith. But that's beside the point. It just sort of fleshes out this man who's standing at the foot of the cross, watching what's going on, and utters a statement so profound that is so foreign to what he himself believes. It's just that the centurion there knew something out of the ordinary had taken place before his eyes. Mark's words indicate that an acknowledgement of who Jesus is his response to what he witnessed. The statement, if you put an A in there, he is the son of a god, would fall in line with Roman religious views. But the translation we have says he is the son of God. And while there is still debate about the translation on those words, that son of God is the term used to refer to the Messiah. And it may be those were his words. So whether this man came to faith or not, I guess I would ask you to consider, if you were standing before Jesus on that cross, could you give that same affirmation? If For many of us, this story is familiar, and as I've said, most of you have probably heard it more than I have. And this year, as we spend this day in reflection and in preparation for Sunday, I would encourage you to consider the characters that witnessed the events of that first Good Friday and identify which one speaks to you or you can see yourself in. But then consider Jesus on the cross, the long-awaited Messiah that so many had waited for to come. And suddenly here he was, facing death in an unexpected way. It was life-changing for many who witnessed it, some for good, some for bad. And Jesus had spoken of his mission to seek and save the lost. His death had made the way for us to be restored, to be who God made us to be. Before things went wrong, he made it possible for those hurts that burden us to be healed. If, like Pilate, you think there may be something to this, but not sure what, perhaps spend time today asking Jesus to reveal himself to you. If, like those on the crowd, you're disappointed with what you expected life to be like as a Christian, don't seek for another to put in his place. Look on Jesus and ask for understanding. If perhaps Barabbas speaks to you, recognise that Jesus has taken your place and that you do not need to look for solutions in your own strength any longer. Say thank you for the freedom that he brings. Today, while we've taken time to come to church, may just be another day for you. Then I would encourage you to find time to find Jesus in the ordinariness of your other activities. Just as it was another day for many of those who encountered Jesus in this event, for Simon, an ordinary journey to the festival became a life-changing event. And for the centurion, another day of guard duty brought insight. Friends, as we reflect on the events of today and prepare for Sunday, I pray that each of you would encounter Jesus anew and know the gift of a love that his death brings to each one of us. Amen.